was going to be at the head table. All of the foreign diplomats were seated at the head table. Unfortunately, there was no interpreter at the head table, and there were no introductions made. Vladimir Putin came
in. And this was a celebration of 10 years of Russia Today, the—
Well, it was a celebration, but it was also a conference, and there was media there, actually, from all over the world, including U.S. media, Canadian, you know, Chinese, et cetera. It was a real chance to lift up a different point of view about U.S. foreign policy, as well as Russian foreign policy, to a broader audience. On that same trip—
So you didn't get a chance to talk with Putin then?
Not a word. I was hoping to deliver my message to Putin, but there was no interpreter. He walked in with a group of people that I thought were his bodyguards. It turns out they actually were his head of communications, his chief of staff, et cetera. But you wouldn't have known it. I spent the evening—well, I spent the dinner talking to the German diplomat to my right. He was the only person who spoke English that was in earshot of me. And, you know, my
assessment of what has been made of that. And, of course, ultimately, Mike Flynn was forced out as national security advisor.
Yes. Well, you know, bear in mind that Mike Flynn has many contacts to Russia and, in fact, was paid $40,000, which he accepted from the Russian government. I wasn't paid a penny, and I declined sponsorship for my transportation, my room and my board. So, you know, I went there absolutely without any conflicts of interest or encumbrances. You know, but it's like nothing happened at that dinner. Nothing happened at that dinner. Michael Flynn has his own issues going on with Russia. You know, I can say that for my own part, that picture circulates without a single fact. I was there with a number of peace advocates who, you know, unfortunately, we have to turn to Russian TV and to Democracy Now!, but there are very few TV stations that cover peace candidates. I was there with Rocky Anderson and Ray McGovern.
The former mayor of Salt Lake City.
Yes.
So we're going to do part two of this discussion, and we're going to post online at democracynow.org. Jill Stein, the 2016 presidential nominee for the Green Party, just came back from South Korea. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Dina Gesner, Hermine Shea, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener.
Lightning injuries can lead to permanent disabilities or death. In 20% of lightning strikes, victims die. 70% of the survivors suffer serious long-term effects. Remember, you are in danger from lightning if you can hear thunder. Learn more about lightning safety at www.lightningsafety.noaa.gov. Lightning kills. Play it safe. This message is brought to you by the Iowa High School Athletic Association and your local National Weather Service office.
Being like a fish out of water isn't all that bad for some. Take the flying fish. With a name like Flying Fish, you can imagine this trickster takes life in the ocean to a different plane. It has adapted an uncommon way to keep predators at bay by catching some air above the waters of our ocean world. The flying fish will glide over the ocean surface when a predator is on its tail. How does it make its nautical life aeronautical? The flying fish builds speed underwater, swimming with its fins tight against its side. Then it uses the bottom lobe of its tail fin to propel itself out of the water. Its wing-like fins help it skim across the surface. Most flying fish have two wings, but others, like the California flying fish, have four. Its small, streamlined body makes it extra aerodynamic. The flying fish cannot really fly like a bird. It glides more like a paper airplane. Flying fish usually just skim across the water. But with the boost of a strong tailwind, look out. Flying fish can soar for as long as 20 seconds. Seeing a flying fish is fun, but it can also be a real wet slap in the face. They can soar onto boat decks, through open portholes, and even into the faces of hapless loungers. I'm Marilyn Cooley. Our Ocean World, produced with the Joint Ocean Commission Initiative, working to protect the life of the ocean so the ocean can help sustain the life of our planet.
And that's no joke. Okay, you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, New York. The time is just about 6 o'clock, and we're all set for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And a very, very good evening to everybody. The program is... The program is Live Trains Going By once again. Wow, couldn't have planned that better.
That looks like liquefied natural gas.
And yeah, big freight train. Freight train going by in Ashland, Virginia.
It's a lot of freight.
That's where we're standing. Well, we're not standing there. We're actually, well, we don't know where we are, do you? We could be anywhere, but no, we're watching.
Let's say we're virtually there.
We're watching a live cam. This is what people do. They set up live cams of various things. And freight trains going by, it's one of the most interesting things to see, because you can have it take up your full TV set, right? And you're just walking around your house, and there's a street scene, and this freight train comes barreling through your living room, and it's great. I can't, if you don't understand that, I can't explain it any better. It's just really cool. And right now we're watching this long train going by in Ashland, Virginia. Last week we were in Kentucky. That was cool because that was the train. Why is it some cars make more noise than other cars when they go by? Oh, and there's an Amtrak coming through on the other side.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that's a passenger train.
Okay, so right now in Ashland, Virginia, there's an Amtrak train that just stopped and apparently is picking up people while a freight train is going by.
Well, maybe it's pausing on the siding so that it can then get onto another line.
It's possible.
I don't know. We're really guessing.
Yeah. It's gotten really busy here in the studio with all this activity that is nowhere near us. But that's the magic of radio. Our theme has just ended, too. Should let you know that. Look, there's timber. There's wood being...
Telephone poles.
Telephone poles, yes. Okay, and there's some
two
lumber.
Two-by-fours.
4x8s or whatever. It's incredible how many things you can fit on a train. It really is.
Yeah, yeah. But, man, the whole logistics industry is weird. And
don't get me started. We're dealing with idiots all day long.
It's like pushing on a bruise. I know. But suffice to say, this is the engine of America.
It is.
Moving goods from place to place and taking advantage of services. And we're your community service here at WSB Stony Brook.
And the freight train has just passed by, but the Amtrak train is still parked on the other side of the track. And actually, half of it is in the street, so cars are still waiting patiently. Okay, and it's about to pass through now. And as it goes by, we might be able to even see some passengers.
That's like 7 cars. It's kind of a short Amtrak train.
It's a short Amtrak train.
You know, people would be surprised how big the Amtrak network is. And they don't do themselves any favors. We were looking into their network.
You know what?
Very hard.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Because...
And not only that, their booking is hard.
We're looking to take another train ride somewhere. And one thing we wanted to do was take the southernmost route. And, you know, booking let's say theoretically, we were going from Los Angeles to New Orleans. If you try this on the Amtrak website, they will insist that you go up to Chicago and come back down again.
Complete diversion.
But you know, if you want to go on the southernmost route, they pretty much discourage you from doing that. And that is something that would be very, very interesting to ride on. There are more routes, more ways to go than you would think.
Well, yeah, we were like forced to dig up old maps and parchment, and it was dusty and amazing. But these lines do exist in the country still, as of today. Support your local railroad,
despite the fact that King Donald wants to eliminate them. He says
he's not a fan.
He says people don't use trains to get around. This is not a major way to travel.
Yeah, his type of people.
Well, first of all, Donald, it's not a major way to travel, perhaps, compared to cars and planes, because it hasn't been built. All right? If you look in Europe, you look in Asia, you look in other places, you see that trains are used a lot because they're efficient, they're more energy friendly, and they're fast. Now, if you had that kind of infrastructure here in this country, yeah, people would use it a lot more. But people do use it. They use it to the—I know they use it because when you try to book train tickets, there aren't any left. Okay, so people are definitely using it. We need a better system. We need faster trains. We need more trains.
It's easy to knock something that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Say that it's underutilized when it hasn't been even built, let alone imagined or realized. And the thing about it is that we haven't, it's like saying it'll never work. You know, it's that negativity. And
we get that all the time.
You know, the rail, as much as he might deride it for passengers, it's not going anywhere. There's really no other way to move all the things I was just talking about, you know, freight and tankers and all of that stuff, all the clean coal that he wants to move.
Freight trains are definitely not I don't mean they're not going anywhere as in they're stuck. No, I mean they're not going anywhere as in they're not going away because, yes, they are vital.
There'll always be something to move on rail.
Yeah, and it's efficient, and it's you know, we just saw a freight train go by in Virginia that was probably about 80 cars long, and when you think of how many trucks that is, you can say, oh, that's 80 truck driver jobs. Okay, fine, you know. Loaded into minivans, and that's a 2,000 minivan jobs. The thing is, what makes sense? What is economically viable? What is efficient? And trains definitely are. And, it's part of our history, and it's something that we should not look down upon.
And it's funny. It's something that hasn't had a lot. I mean, we've put a lot of emphasis on aviation and aerospace, which is great. Don't get me wrong. That's really helpful. But it's kind of something that's been maybe due. You know, you need some investment, and we need a little bit more of the research and advanced technology. And if you do that, you then create infrastructure that is economically viable.
And there are people who are trying to do this despite all the negative. It's funny. We have people walking in front of the camera here. They have no idea.
I know, I see
they're
that.
Being broadcast on a radio station far away. But there are people, like in Texas, for instance, they want to build high-speed rail, and they're actually doing it. Supposedly in 2 years, that's going to be working.
And didn't Amtrak has invested. They've bought new high-speed locomotives.
They have.
The argument being, okay, you know, the rolling stock is ready, but the speeds at which those engines would be able to travel, there's no rail that can accommodate it.
Or not yet. Enough rail, yes.
Not enough to accommodate it. Maybe the Northeast Corridor, but nationwide.
Uh-huh.
And it really should be the variety. All of the different modes of infrastructure and transportation need attention. You don't talk about roads without talking about bridges. You don't talk about... So instead of only subsidizing and investing in airports, which is great if you need to get somewhere fast, but investing in rail so that, as I said, when you need to move something that can't go any other way, you have the infrastructure there, and people also are connected and can benefit from that infrastructure at the same time. I don't know what else I'm going to say. You can't make a pipeline for 2x4s? I don't know.
Well, we have a lot to say about rail because there's so much to talk about.
I know. There's new train cars for MTA. There's all kinds of exciting stuff.
What's funny, there are new subway cars coming. The kind, and get this, folks, the kind that you can see all the way down the train. I don't know if people who've traveled outside New York know what I'm talking about. But inside New York, you might not have seen this. Imagine being on a subway car where you're in the first car, and there are no doors between the first car and the last car. So it's like this gigantic, long car. That's how it is in many countries, and they have new trains on the way that will be like that in New York City. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, really, we could go on and on about stuff here, and it's exciting, but at the same time, it's concerning, and we want to talk about it because I don't think it gets talked about enough.
It definitely doesn't. The other thing, though, this is the summer of hell. And we're going to get into what that means in a little bit. Right on Long Island right now.
There's a guy unicycle. On a unicycle.
There's a guy on a unicycle going by in Ashland, Virginia. Wow, how about that? Shout out to you.
Hot dog.
Wow.
Wow. The alleged summer
of
hell.
I feel like I'm invading these people's privacy. They have no idea we're watching them, let alone broadcasting them.
It's true.
As they walk around. And,
it's true.
But that guy just ran a stop
sign. It's a public street. It's a public street.
Should we report people who run stop signs? Because I can see their license plate.
We don't have to report them. We can critique them.
I want to be a good citizen. I want to make this a better place for everybody, especially the law-abiding people. Well, anyway, okay, so we can sort that out later.
So the Summer of Hell, I would say, isn't it the alleged Summer of Hell? Because you've noticed something about it.
Well, I've noticed that it's really not so bad. What it means, basically, Penn Station is in horrible shape because it's overextended, which means it's being used a lot, which means it's extremely popular rail travel, but they don't have the time, the resources to keep things fixed. And that's what they're doing this summer. Amtrak actually owns Penn Station. The Long Island Railroad and New Jersey Transit also use it, but they don't own it. So Amtrak has to maintain it. And here's the thing. The MTA and Amtrak are at loggerheads over who's supposed to maintain and pay. And these companies should be working together, not against each other, because they're all being victimized by the feds as far as funding, as far as maintenance.
Or competition. I mean, I was just talking about airlines that are heavily, heavily subsidized.
Absolutely. So they need to be subsidized as well. But what's happening this summer is Amtrak is finally getting around to fixing things. They got to pay for it. They got to get that money from someplace. And it means taking, I think, three tracks out of commission at a time as they're maintaining it. And it's going to take 2 full months. And that's what the Summer of Hell is all about. In fact, we're halfway through the Summer of Hell. And what it means is that a lot of trains have to be diverted or overextended. People are being urged to go to Brooklyn instead, to go to Hunters Point Avenue or Long Island City, stations in Queens where they can then get a subway to Manhattan or even a ferry. It's inconvenient, but we've experienced inconvenience many, many times, whether it's through a hurricane or just through traveling and having to make bizarre connections. It's a challenge, and I think the people of New York have really risen to that challenge, because after a month, I'm not hearing any complaints. Yeah, the usual complaints about delayed trains and no announcements and things like that, but yeah, you need to like divert people. We can get through that in 2 months. It'll be a better system. Now, the alternative to that was to have it go on for years and have overnight construction.
Yeah.
This is better. And I think once we get through this in another month, we'll say, hey, why don't we do this for other things and get the infrastructure repaired quicker?
Yeah, this is really the exciting part of this. A couple of years ago, or a year ago, I guess, I can't remember exactly, we talked about how they had decoupled funding for Amtrak for the Northeast Corridor, because that was the most profitable part of the Amtrak system, decoupled it from the funding for the rest of the network in the country.
That's right.
Which we debated, it's good and bad. We need as much development in the rest of the country, but I also think it's very, very good for the profitable part of Amtrak's network to get the ability to allocate funds specifically for that part of the network because it's so heavily utilized. And I can't help but think that this is the kind of project that was realized after that decoupling of the funding, because they could really concentrate in an area that, if you imagine like a funnel, the ingress to Penn Station is like the tip, the skinnier part of the funnel.
Okay.
And then it fans out to all the different tracks. The area where that funnel fans out, kind of where it's skinny and then starts to fan out, that entire section is what they're working on.
Yes.
In Penn Station. It's a big section, and it's probably complex. It's got a lot of switching and other kinds of sensing.
If you look on YouTube, you will see there's a time lapse.
It's really cool.
Where did you look under to find that?
It was Amtrak's YouTube site has. I think in their uploads or whatever, it's organized in whatever way you'll see there. But there's I think at least 3 videos from the last couple of weeks of the actual work that they're doing, and it's fast forward. It's a time lapse, so you see the week or the day or several days worth of work happening very quickly. It's brilliant to watch,
yeah.
And I hope they keep posting more stuff like that, because people really need to see where they shine. You know how they're good at doing what they do, because those are jobs. That's real American sweat and work that's going on right underneath our feet here in New York, and is an example that skill should be celebrated because we need that in many other parts of this country.
Now, you know, you were mentioning the profitable part of Amtrak and the non-profitable part. How do you think the profitable part of Amtrak got to be the profitable part? Because they built it up, because they maintained it.
Cooperation.
And the same thing could happen to other parts of the country if they did the same. Imagine a fast train from New York to Chicago that rivaled planes. You could have that. You could get across the country really, really quickly if you wanted to. I would kind of miss taking several days to get across on a long-distance train. But, you know,
it's romantic.
It is. There are other options as well. Other countries do this where they have fast trains and slow trains.
But if I had a choice between a 5-hour flight to the West Coast and maybe an 8-hour train, I'd probably be equally as romantic for the now much shorter 8-hour train or whatever it is, 14 hours. Yeah, I don't know.
There's nothing romantic about a 5-hour flight.
Right, no, between security and it's not 5 hours when you add up the getting to the airport and the several hours of all of that nightmare. At least you have the option, and you know, to think that when you compare those, the 14-hour train ride would be much shorter. Currently, it's like 96 hours. So, I mean, that would be the long way when you look at those options. But we don't have those yet.
I would, you know, suggest to people listening who are in the States and interested in this, the biggest favor you can do yourself if you have a little bit of time is get on one of these long-distance trains, the kind that have sleeper cars.
People have written us and said, I'm so glad you mentioned going by rail because I went by rail. We want more letters like that.
Yeah.
We would love to hear people taking rail in the U.S., don't go to Europe. It's there, of course, and we've celebrated it many times, but it's in your backyard.
Yeah, take a train from New York to Chicago, maybe, or Chicago to Los Angeles or San Francisco or Seattle, and get either what they call a roomette or a bedroom. One is more expensive than the other. Just enjoy that, because what you wind up having is this incredible experience where you're basically in this moving hotel.
Yeah.
Another train's coming, by the way. You basically live there for a day or two. You meet a lot of other people. You have 3 meals a day, and you're always sitting with strangers, and you have the most incredible conversations.
Incredibly comfortable.
You see the scenery going by. You get to relax, read books.
Walk around.
Go on your PC, whatever you want to do.
Yep.
It's just, I can't describe it unless you actually experience it. It will change your life. Now, the cost factor is something. Okay, what kind of train is this? This is a freight train coming by.
Speaking of walking around,
how many locomotives is that?
I don't know. Two, three, two.
It's incredible to me that freight trains have so many locomotives pulling, but this tells you how much they're pulling. What are these things that they're shipping? Little blue containers.
These are containers of missiles and...
Oh, please, no.
I'm just kidding.
That's the thing with freight trains. You never know what's in them. It's always a mystery.
Oh, yeah, that's radioactive.
No, don't joke around.
All right, I'm sorry.
Trying to promote rail travel
here.
Now, here's a tanker car after all the blue things, and some boxcars are coming up after that. And everybody's waiting patiently for this huge freight train to go by. People, you know, curse and swear when an LIRR train goes over a crossing on Long Island. That's only like 8 cars long. These can be over 100, and you just have to wait for it to pass.
You know, did you see the story this week about the FAA mandating seat arrangements? They got sued. Basically, the seating arrangements on planes have been up to airlines until now. And the FAA wasn't regulating it, but I don't know exactly who sued who or how it happened.
Wait, so are we finally going to have the seats where we face each other, like on the subway? Because that's how I want to sit on an airplane.
That would be a cool way to sit on an airplane. But no. They've been steadily cramming people, and it had been left up to airlines who, of course, want to maximize their profits and of course, have some autonomy in their own, you know, configurations and how they serve their customers. Finally, people got fed up enough to appeal to the FAA, and that decision, a court ordered the FAA, I think, to regulate this now. Big government is getting in your plane seat now.
So many good things happen when it's preceded by the phrase, finally people got fed up.
Yeah, finally people got fed up. Just fill in anything after that, and you'll see that it is most often correlated with social and other forms of change.
You know, there are some parts, we'll get into this.
So be excited, airplane seats could be getting more comfortable, but there, not nearly as comfortable as trains.
Are some parts of either this country or maybe in Canada where they have what's known as mixed-use trains, and that, what that is, it's part freight train and part passenger train. Imagine that.
Oh, right. So you get a couple cars of passengers. Yeah, you can do all kinds of configurations, just like you see on this freight train. All our listeners, of course, watching along with us, that there's a variety of types of rail cars. And in fact, even Amtrak, you can attach a private rail car.
You can do that. You can attach your own private rail car to the end of an Amtrak train.
It's around, I guess I shouldn't say prices. It's not as expensive as you think, as you have a rail car.
But and this train is finishing now. But the thing that is a bit of a challenge is, where do you keep your own rail car while you're not traveling with it? You know, if you have a siding by your house, great, but most people don't.
Well, there's many parts of the country where you could probably find some affordable siding.
I say we all go in on a train car and keep it parked at some guy's house who has a rail siding. And then whenever we want to go someplace, we just, you know, back it out and somehow link it up to an Amtrak train and take it wherever we want to go.
I'm all for it. I would so do that. And I've seen, you know, rural places that you know, there's somebody that's there to, especially in places that are rocky, like Montana or wherever, where, you know, you'd have snow and stuff, so they have people along that route that, you know, roll out the old snowplow trains.
So I was mentioning before about the cost of actually getting on a train and going someplace in this country. And, yeah, it can be pricey, especially if you get one of these bedrooms. But there are ways around that, too. I mean, first of all, it's well worth it. If you factor in what it costs to stay in a hotel, what it costs to rent a car or otherwise
food.
Get someplace, and food, because that's included as well.
It's included in your ticket.
You figure it all out, and it's not really that much. But if you want to make it even less, they have all kinds of promotions, and there's even a credit card where you get points like you do with an airline, and these points can be redeemed for travel. And honestly, I haven't paid for train travel in years, and I've gone many places just based on credit card points. So it can be done.
But it's just not as prevalent. You don't see it. It's not advertised the same way. There aren't, sub cottage industries for all the different travel and flight searching.
When is the last time you saw an advertisement for cross-country train travel?
Right.
First of all, I guess Amtrak doesn't have the budget for that.
Yeah, they can't really advertise like that. Maybe they do print advertisements.
But I do know it's popular because it's very hard to get accommodations and tickets sometimes.
But you know those commercials for like the, comparing tickets and flights?
Mm-hmm.
When do they ever mention trains?
That's right. If you go on Kayak, do they give you a train option?
Or what's the Trivago?
I guess they do, but you have to really look for it.
Yeah, there's tons of them. There's like sub-industries of sub-industries trying to put the new industries like Kayak and all them out of business.
Uh-huh,
now. It's
uh-huh.
like, it's crazy. So mature. It's overly mature. And what we're talking about today is supporting an old mode of travel. Something that has been neglected because of the advances.
Let me caution you, though, because, yeah, it is an old mode of transportation. But people might think from that, okay, it's old, it's outdated, it's antique. No, it's not. If you go to other parts of the world, you'll see how modern it is, how fast it is, how technologically adept it is. You could be on a train in Europe, for instance, and there's this screen that tells you where you are, what the next station is, how fast you're going at that moment, the time it is, the temperature, all of this information constantly updated. You will get all sorts of connection info, and you will get to where you're going within a minute of where you're supposed to, when you're supposed to arrive.
If you're even looking up from your screens because you're enjoying all the free Wi-Fi and stuff.
Free Wi-Fi, all kinds of cool things.
But again, this is about multiple modes of transportation working in coordination.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, when we hear about, you know, the president, whatever his name is, Donald D., it's only talked about as an all or nothing. It's this or that. No, No. It is all of these different types of transportation. They all need to be supported and work together in symphony.
Can I veer onto a siding for a moment?
Yes.
To keep the train analogy going?
Please.
But just to, you mentioned our president, and I just want to say a couple of words. I want to talk more about trains, to be honest, because it makes me happy. But
yes, please.
We do have to talk about this, because the guy came to Long Island last week. He came to my home, not my home, but my home county. And he basically dragged us down into the mud as well. We all saw this. We all saw what he did. We talked about this last week. We said, come on, someone, you know, take the guy hostage.
I want to see him get arrested.
And nobody wanted to take him hostage because nobody wanted to keep him. But he came here, was here for less than an hour. But in that hour, oh, my God, he spoke to a bunch of cops in Brentwood. It's supposed to be about MS-13, about the gang that somehow he's going to put an end to.
Let's just qualify the Hispanic gang, because let's not get it twisted. There are other gangs. But they're focusing on this gang.
Well, this guy is so ignorant that he basically assumes all members of this gang are from other countries and don't belong here. And that's not how gangs work. Gangs recruit people who live here, have lived here all their lives. And while there might be connections to other countries, he's basically saying, yes, we're going to find these people and deport them. Well, you can't deport U.S. citizens, all right? So get that out of your head right there. The gang problem is a gang problem. But your simplistic solutions are doing nothing to help that problem.
But the association supports anti-immigration sentiments, which is a whole other issue. And, of course, this is the most violent of gangs.
Yeah, well, you know, there's all kinds of debates you could say about who's violent and who isn't
violent. There's a lot of violence.
And whether policy is violent and all. We don't have time to get into that. But what he did was he addressed these cops and basically started making jokes about police brutality. I think we've all heard about this. So basically, he's saying that you know how you guys, when you put somebody, you put a perp in a car, you shield their head so they don't bump their head. Well, maybe you don't have to do that anymore. And you know, there was this slight pause, and then you know, some people started laughing, and everybody started laughing, and that was just so embarrassing that our police force here in Suffolk County was laughing at. That is police brutality. If you bang someone's head on a car, that's abuse. And keep in mind, a perp is not a convicted a criminal. It's somebody who is suspected, who is being arrested. You treat them as somebody who is not. First of all, even if they are guilty, you don't commit violence against them. This is exactly the road we're not supposed to be going down. He makes a joke about this. I think less than an hour later, Suffolk County Police Department had to issue a statement saying they don't agree with those remarks at all. Police departments all over the country had to do the same thing. Unfortunately, on camera, you see our own cops laughing at this. I think the same thing would happen anywhere.
In their dress uniforms.
It's... you know, I'm trying to get into their minds and say, yeah, they were on the spot. They kind of had to be polite and laugh. But you kind of saw it in their faces, like this relief, like, yeah, we can laugh at this, and kind of showing true colors then. Yeah, we do want to do this. We do want to brutalize in a way, because, damn it, these people are guilty and they're getting away with all kinds of things. And so what if they bump their head? And wow, when you start going down that road, it is a very dark road to go down, and our president is encouraging that. It was so embarrassing.
He's a simple person, and he's oversimplifying something that is not simple. I mean, there are a lot of different types of crimes. There are a lot of different types of scenarios that police officers find themselves in, but this is a protocol. It's a protocol because you have to have a standard, standard of dignity.
Yes.
Okay, when you put someone into custody, whether it's you know, on a battlefield or in civil society, there is, of course, the presumption of innocence in our system, but there's also a level of decorum that the police, they do that repeatedly. The reason you see that is because it's part of their training, it's part of their protocol. There are other parts of their training and protocol that we are having serious problems with.
Yes.
And by making this okay, by saying, you know what I say, you don't have to put the hand there, by saying that, you are implying that the other ills in those protocols and in police enforcement aren't as important, and that is wrong.
Yeah,
simple man.
You can just overlook it, and everybody's going to wink and nod and say, let you get away with it. No, that's not how it works. We've seen, I think individually, we've seen cops handle things very badly, and we've seen cops handle things very well. And it's always a relief when they handle things well, because they're supposed to take care of stressful situations, de-escalate them, treat people with respect, and ensure our safety. That's what they're supposed to do. And, there are people who say that cops are always bad, always evil. I don't buy into that at all. But it only takes a few to basically pollute the entire spectrum. And that's something that we cannot encourage in any sense, whether it's through a joke or through bad policy or poor training.
Like, I wouldn't even wish this upon the alleged President Trump when the Secret Service turns on him and arrests him. When he's hauled off, I hope they put their hands on his wig and prevent it from getting hit in the patrol car. You know, that's
enough for me. I don't need to see his head hit the top of the car.
No.
I need to see his head go into the car.
Yeah.
And to know
I'm happy with that.
That he's got the cuffs on and that he's heading for the big house. And oh, dreams. It's one day. But okay, so this week has been incredibly crazy, as have been pretty much all the weeks so far this year. But this guy Scaramucci from Long Island. It's not been a good week for Long Island.
Yeah.
This guy comes from Manhasset, walking distance from Bill O'Reilly's house.
He drives a Bentley SUV.
Drives a Bentley SUV. Plate numbers on request.
Mm-hmm.
Got divorced from his wife. What? When?
I don't know. She divorced him while she was in labor or something. There's all kinds of things going on. She had the baby on Monday. She divorced him at the beginning of July, I think. I don't know when the papers were signed.
This is none of my business. So he got hired as the communications director, right? And then
Yes. Then
he had this disastrous interview with the New Yorker. I don't understand. I know nothing about politics or government or the corporate world other than to criticize it. But I do know that if you're in a position, you shouldn't have an interview where you're basically using all kinds of foul language and demeaning your fellow employees. And just basically acting like an idiot. He does this. The story comes out literally a couple of days after he's announced for this really prestigious position, and basically makes a complete idiot of himself. Looks completely unhinged.
And
a few days later is let go.
He sabotages his own opportunity. I mean, if you know anything about corporate communications or public relations, it's not how you handle
anything. He thinks
he'd get away with it,
but the thing is, Trump encouraged this.
Uh-huh.
And this is again the side effect of this kind of behavior on his part. While he may say right now he found his remarks to be unacceptable and that's why he's gone, he didn't at first. It was only when General John Kelly was brought in as the new chief of staff that he said, yes, he has to go, because John Kelly said he had to go, not Donald Trump. So basically, Trump is encouraging people to act like idiots. And it's only when a grown-up comes into the room and says, you got to stop this, that anything is done about it. Now, put that in perspective with the way he's talking to police, and you'll see that bad behavior will seem to be rewarded until it's not, until somebody in authority comes along and says, yeah, you can't do that. You know,
interesting.
That's what's happening in his own house, and that's what he's bringing to other places as well.
A lot of parallels there. Yeah.
And I'm also really worried, just for the record, that these generals are everywhere. He's got generals surrounding him.
He's
got a member of the military now running the White House.
He's reliving his military school upbringing.
Yeah, but he never went to the military, did he?
No, he went to a boarding school or something that was militaristic or something.
Uh-huh.
But honestly, because of that history of his upbringing and, daddy issues or whatever his problem is, like, it's not at all surprising that that is who he, respects, trusts. None of those really seem like
fears.
The right words. Yeah, they actually get him to pay attention, just like, straightening out an unruly teenager in military school.
The thing is, this country is based on the premise that civilians have the ultimate say. When you have generals put in charge of all the powerful departments, when they're the ones making the military decisions, it might sound like it makes sense. Why shouldn't a general make a military decision? Ultimately, that decision falls to the commander-in-chief, who is a civilian. And in this case, he's deferring to generals, and he's basically bringing them in other places. It's not, I mean, I don't want to say having Trump in charge of all this is a good thing, but it's not a good step to have the military making decisions either. Unless the decision is to oust Trump, which eventually they might have to make that decision, but only with the backing of the population. And right now, that's, I don't think that's the case. Yeah, I wish it was, but I don't think it is.
Every circumstance that the U.S. faces governmentally and politically, economically, does not have a military solution.
Mm-hmm.
It's like wandering around your life dealing with everything at the end of, you know, the barrel of a gun. It's not really how you, you know, borrow a library book or fix a leaky faucet. You know, you can't just blast it into working order.
Right. So anyway, that's the week of Trump this week. Every week we say, okay, this can't get any crazier, and every week it does.
It's not surreal anymore, though. I mean, what is a surreal nightmare? I mean, surreal is kind of like dreamy and good.
Well,
and it's not really a nightmare, but it stopped being surreal because it's sinking in. I think
it's a slow motion nightmare.
We're like being conditioned, and I feel like it's, you know, again, like I'm not surprised at the generals. You're right. You raise a good point, being somewhat uneasy about it. But again, it's why I don't know. I feel like I've been lulled into, okay, yeah, it's just another crazy week.
Given the choice between the generals and Trump, all right, the generals are better, but I don't think that's a good idea at all. North Korea, great example. He does not know how to handle North Korea. All he knows is how to play the Kim Jong-un card himself and act like him, and that's not going to work against Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, the Chinese, I think, were saying their diplomats were basically saying that comments like all options are on the table. These are things that are inflammatory to the North Koreans, and Trump doesn't seem to realize that. He's just flexing strength and doing it in kind of a insulting way. You know, he's not showing them any respect. Not that, you know, we're having big negotiations with them at this point, but it's only making it worse.
I'm not defending their regime or their attitude or anything from North Korea, but basically they're being pushed into a confrontation right now. And I don't think we would have a confrontation if we weren't pushing them. Now, we say, oh my God, they can launch a missile. First, the missile might hit the tip of Alaska. Okay, but do you really think the missile is going to make it there without being intercepted at some point with all the technology we have? I don't think so.
It didn't even re-enter, actually. I read some stories about that. Right. Not that that's a good thing to bet
on. The point is, okay, so they're developing a weapon that could reach us. All right, yeah, fine. Let them do that if they feel they need to do that. It's unfortunate because they could be feeding their people with all that money. But, okay, so you developed a missile that could reach us. I'm just curious, how many missiles do we have that can reach them? Now, okay, they're evil and we're good. But you know what? They don't think they're evil and they don't think we're good. So if you look at it from that perspective, they're a country. They're a small country that has how many thousands of missiles pointed at them. They're coming up with one that can fight back, and they're seen as the threat. It might seem a little off to them. Once you start trying to see it from their point of view, even if they are in your eyes out of their minds, you might have a chance of reaching them. This, what he's doing, no chance at all, but a good chance of escalating a confrontation that does not have to happen. I hate to say this because I sound, you know, I sound pompous, but I know more about North Korea than Donald Trump does.
Yes.
I know more about how to talk to them than he does. I am worried about what he is going to do to escalate the situation that does not need escalation right now. Does not. And, you know, there are so many things that we could be doing differently that could de-escalate the situation and actually make things improve. But we got to watch him muddle through it and make all the mistakes. And it's just really regrettable. I said I wanted to get back to trains, and I do, because we're going to run out of time.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about.
There really is. First of all, two
nuclear power plants in the South canceled. No more nuclear power down there.
I don't know about this.
Yeah, South Carolina, I think. There were a couple projects. They are ceased.
Well, I know Trump had nothing to do with canceling that.
That's right.
He wants whatever is bad, he wants. So.
This is due to some bankruptcies and all of that.
Okay,
but yeah, there's a lot going on in that. There's so much to talk about. Energy, much to talk about.
We only have one hour. We need to either talk faster or have more time.
I had no idea that. Yeah. Okay. Go on.
So and also, I just wanted to ask listeners. We have this this total eclipse coming up August 21st.
Yes.
We want to be somewhere for it. So if you have any ideas, it's like this band. This is really incredible. This band that goes across the country. It starts in Oregon. And goes at like a 45-degree angle down into South Carolina. And it's like 60 miles wide. And throughout that band, that is where the total eclipse will be total.
Like dark.
I don't think I've ever seen a total eclipse. In fact, I'm sure I haven't.
I've
been
seen
in places where partial eclipses. Yeah. But I want to be somewhere where it's in totality on August 21st.
You're
not
alone.
Where should we be? Where should we be, folks? Let us know what you think is a good option.
Prime location. Doesn't have to be a big place.
Yeah.
Could be remote.
We'll rent a car and drive there. We'll broadcast from there. We'll definitely record it. We'll record an eclipse for the radio. That's a first. We've recorded fireworks for the radio before. We're open to suggestion. And we recommend you do the same thing as well and find some interesting place to go. Because the last time there was an eclipse like this, I think, was 1919 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That was visible throughout the United States or throughout this band. I don't know. There's always something. They always say it's once in a lifetime, and then next year the same thing happens someplace else. So I can't really say for sure how rare this is. But
yeah,
it's pretty damn cool.
This cross-section, this trajectory, this specific eclipse is going to be really exciting. A lot of people are making plans for
it. So write to us, otw@2600.com, if your suggestions. Okay, I wanted to talk about this because this is something you actually found by accident. You were watching BBC, and this story came on about this... This little town in Manitoba called Churchill and how they were having trouble. We talk about the summer of hell with our rail. They have a real summer of hell because they have a rail line Via Rail, part of the Canadian network.
It's operated by a company that's actually American. The line itself.
It's called OmniTrax. They operate the tracks.
They acquired it a couple years ago.
But the train goes from, I believe, Winnipeg up into Churchill.
And the service is from via rail, yes. The Canadian Railway.
Now, what happened was they have some severe weather up there all the time. And the tracks washed out. Basically, they need repair, and the train service has been completely suspended. Now, because of the nature of the terrain up there, they can't build a road because the road would sink.
Yeah.
It's kind of like swampy, you know, except in the winter. They have what's known as ice roads in the winter.
Right.
So they can travel in the winter only when it's frozen.
The entire area used to be a lake, apparently,
so,
and is very marshy.
The only land access into this area, and there's a smaller town called Ilford, and I think they have about 140 people.
Thompson.
And Churchill has 900 people.
Yep.
The only access, the only land access is rail, and the rail is washed out. So basically,
over 30 different parts of the rail section.
Yeah.
They did an assessment.
We were going to talk to the mayor of Churchill tonight, but he's busy in meetings, unfortunately. But that's what mayors do.
The plan they've been kind of floating for, I guess, the last 2 years since 2015. There's been an attempt.
Well, they say 90 jobs have been lost because of this. That's 10% of their population. So think about the effect that is having.
Huge.
What they're trying to do is work something out with OmniTrax where they can buy the rail themselves. And by they, I mean the native people in that area, because these are native towns. They want to actually own and operate the train themselves. Most people there work for the train already. So they know a thing or two about how to run it.
And there are other lines connected to this that are native owned as well and
yes.
Have maintenance services. So this isn't unheard of in the area, but this particular line is currently managed by OmniTrax. Now, OmniTrax maintains that this line, because they closed the port of Churchill in 2014 or 2015, maybe because of the reliability of the track or just the shipments alone, for a variety of reasons, this line has become, in their view, not something that is profitable.
Right.
And that is leaving this in sort of a weird zone of the rail is something that is the maintenance of the rail was subsidized by the government and VIA, but VIA won't pay for it because Omnitrax manages it. But because it's not profitable in their view, they don't want to fix the current state of it without more federal funding. And the government of Canada has already put up like $8.3 billion in loan guarantees or whatever. Like, or maybe I'm wrong. No, that was a different story. I'm sorry. They put up a lot of money already to have it in the current arrangement, and Omnitrax will not move unless it's part the $30 million or whatever they estimate it's going to cost is also subsidized. So they're kind of wanting the government to pay twice, but at the same time, the community in Churchill's maintaining that this is basically the abandonment of the line, because if they determine it's not profitable and they're not maintaining it in a functional way, they're essentially abandoning ownership.
Right.
So the idea is to either get the thing maintained at as little cost as possible, or to relinquish ownership from this American company such that the native people there can own and maintain it themselves.
Now, Churchill Mayor Michael Spence is kind of a counterpart to our Vice President Mike Pence. Now, his name is very similar. Michael Spence said, enough is enough. He's calling upon governments and the shipping company Omnitrax to come to the table to find a fix for the only rail line into his community. He says the northern community's frustration with the corporation, provincial and federal governments is growing. Basically, what the company is saying is that they won't have the rail line fixed until October. And what that means is that the lifeline to the town is completely inoperable. It's a main shipping line for goods and supplies, completely cut off. Fruit prices dramatically increased. Businesses have been forced to lay off staff due to soaring cost of securing the goods for their business to operate. And basically, they are hurting big time because of this. And they need this this vital link to be restored. If Omnitrax doesn't want to do it, they're willing to do it themselves. As you said, there is precedent for this. This is the Hudson Bay Rail Company is what this is called right now, an offshoot of Via Rail. There is another line adjacent to it, which has already been bought from Omnitrax by First Nations. There is a train line in Labrador on the eastern part of the country that is also run by First Nation. So there is precedent in Canada to do this, and the hope is that they will do this for this particular line as well and run things on their own terms, and I really hope that works out.
Yeah, the crux of this is that there has to be a solution. As we've said, winter is coming, and this is vital for them. The shipping cost for food, I think it's $1.63 a kilogram.
Wow.
If you think about that, if your food just get from the grocery store to you, not just paying for it, but then to get it to you,
right,
cost that much, you would be changing your diet at least. There is a lot more to this story, and we're really rooting for this, and would like to see something happen. And in fact, this has inspired us to plan a trip there.
I want to go to Churchill. I really do.
That's where we're going.
We can't get there now, but. I'd love to go there, maybe drive on one of the ice roads. We want to keep up to date on this story. Hopefully we'll talk to the mayor at some point.
Yeah, let's get in touch. We'll talk to him.
Other people up there as well. If you're in that area, please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Oh, you've been on a fast train, and it's going off the rail, and you can't come back. Can't come back again. And you start breaking down in the pouring rain. Oh, you've been on a fast train, on a fast train. And your lover has gone away. Don't it make you feel sad? And you're going on a journey way into the land, and you start breaking down, 'cause you're under strain, and you're jumping on, yes, you're jumping on a fast train, jumping on a fast train. Gotta go on the lam, stuck in no man's land. On your way back, breaking down, and you're going to the sound. But you hear that fast train. To the sound of the wheels. Oh, deep down in your heart, do you really know how you feel? Then you start breaking down, going to the pain. Keep on moving on a fast train. Moving on a fast train. Well, we over the land. Next thing you're out of your mind, and you're out of your depth, and through the window she crept. Oh, there's nowhere to go in the sleet and snow. Just keep on moving, ooh, on a fast train, moving on a fast train. You got to go.
Thank you. My friends, this is Finn with you. Finn's Revolution on WUSB, Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, WUSB.FM, and Eric Bloom of Blue Oyster Cult is going to be with us. That's right, Blue Oyster Cult, Stony Brook's own, about 8 p.m., so stay tuned for that. In the meanwhile, crazy, crazy stuff. Stay tuned. And I love Scaramucci, by the way. Wake up, mama.